Sophie Treadwell's 1928 play, Ma Chenal, is an expressionist drama inspired by the true life story of Ruth Snyder, a Queens housewife who was sent to the electric chair for the murder of her husband. The last time it was on Broadway was 86 years ago, but now the Roundabout Theater Company has given it a snazzy new production at the American Airlines Theater on West 42nd Street. It stars Rebecca Hall, making her Broadway debut, and I'm very pleased to welcome her to our show. Hi.
Hi, thank you.
And you're making your debut in a part where you use an American accent, in fact, a Queens accent.
I am, yes. Yeah. I don't know if it's Queens, actually, because it's not Ruth Snyder verbatim. It's just inspired by the facts of it. So she's meant to be an ordinary everywoman from anywhere.
In fact, the characters are your character is called Young Woman.
Yeah.
Other characters are called Mother, Husband, and Lover. Do we know why Sophie Treadwell gave her characters such general names?
Yes, I think we probably do. I think it's because she didn't want to write a story that was specific, but more she wanted to write more of a fable, I suppose, and show sort of universal truths or untrue, she just wanted to show a society. So it sort of lets the audience off the hook if you make it specific and say this is this person and this case would only happen to this person. Instead, she's making a story about this could happen to any person.
Well, it lives on through the arts. At the time, it was a sensation, but we not only have this play, we also have James M. Cain claiming that it was the inspiration for
Double Indemnity,
and also The Postman Always Rings Twice.
Yes, no, it inspired multiple art pieces, fictions, all sorts of things, and I think for many reasons, but possibly because she was the first woman to get the electric chair in New York, and also the sensationalism that went on around the case was so unprecedented.
And the play was written pretty soon after the trial.
Well, I find it fascinating. I mean, Treadwell was a journalist for some time, and she definitely sat in on the trial of Ruth Snyder. But I find it particularly fascinating that that 4 weeks previous to the publication of the play, or when she copyrighted the play, was the event of the front page of the Daily News being the photograph of Ruth Snyder in the electric chair.
That caused a sensation. Many people felt it was an inappropriate thing to do.
Very, very inappropriate. You can see why when you see the photograph. It's still incredibly shocking. I mean, a photographer sneaked in a camera that was strapped to his shin and managed to take this photograph seconds before they pulled the lever. And it was front page news. And I think Treadwell had a visceral response to it. And the play, to me, feels like a sort of primal scream in relation to it that sort of came pouring out of her. 4 weeks directly after that.
Well, and she wants to give us a complex character, not somebody who's just a villain who killed her husband.
Well, I think her feeling about Ruth Snyder was very much that everyone in the press wants to make a story out of her and tell us that she was a demon or a victim or whatever, but there was never any actual sense of who she was from her. I mean, she was never... There was no personal account that one could hold up now. And so the play, I think, is an attempt to humanize that and say how could this have happened to an ordinary woman within this society?
Well, there are a lot of negatives about her. She's unhappy with work, even more unhappy living with her mother. So when her boss proposes marriage, she accepts. And she does this as a way of getting out of working and living with her mother, and then she soon discovers that her husband is not to her liking. Michael Cumstey plays him marvelously, but he seems like a decent but oblivious kind of guy.
Yeah, he's a product of the time, and he thinks he's doing the best thing.
And then there's the birth of the baby, and that doesn't help her mood any.
No.
Is it hard for audiences to empathize with Helen at that point when she rejects her baby?
I think it's necessarily hard for audiences to empathize with Helen. I think she's...
We're calling her Helen, even though she isn't Helen.
She gets referred to Helen a couple of times. you know, to me, this is the quintessential story of an underdog, really. I mean, she has no agency, and she has no ability. She's not heroic in the sense that she doesn't have the imagination to see an escape anywhere. And that's, you know, that's a difficult thing, I think, for modern audiences or any audience to cope with, because we all like to say it's your fault if you don't make things better. But what the play is actually asking you to think about is there's plenty of people out there who are born into circumstances where they're not taught to see another option. They're not taught to see anything beyond what they're given. And in that sense, you know, we're responsible to help those people.
Is it your job as an actor to keep the audience kind of on your side?
Yes, I think it's my job to try and make sense of that. I think were I to play her as a straight out neurotic from the get go, I don't think that's artful. I don't think that makes any sense. I think the point is the play happens to her. She's a fragile, sure, she's an orchid, she's a fragile character at the beginning, but then the play happens to her and she can't see any other way out, and she can't do anything until the point that she does the most dramatic, horrible thing.
As the title suggests, it's almost she's caught up in the mechanisms of society, and we'll get to that in a moment. My guest is Rebecca Hall, who is making her Broadway debut in Machinal, a play that was produced on Broadway in 1928, and is just being revived today. Most people in this country know you mainly for your work in films like Vicky, Cristina, Barcelona, the Prestige, Frost Nixon. But I'm assuming you've done a lot of theatre work in London.
Yes, no, I've done lots of theatre. I started doing theatre when I first started acting. I did stuff in the West End, stuff in regional theatres in Bath, and touring productions. And actually, the first time I came and did anything in New York was when I was 21. I did Rosalind and As You Like It, that my father directed at BAM. And that was the first time I ever did anything in around these parts.
Well, your father is Peter Hall, one of the greatest living theatre directors. So you grew up around the theatre, and I'm assuming it was when you were with him, it was a major topic of conversation. There's a new film in which he puts acting students through a number of fascinating exercises. I don't know if you've seen it, but did he do anything like that with you when you were growing up? Have you walk a straight line across a rug and things like that?
No, he didn't, actually. I think he's rightly so. His primary interaction with me was as a father, not as a director. So I didn't see that side of him all that much.
Did he encourage you to go into acting?
No, absolutely not. He didn't. I mean, my mother's an opera singer, so she equally had a perspective on this. Neither of them actually encouraged or discouraged me. They were very, you know, incredibly sophisticated in the sense of that they just let me make up my own mind about it and decided to be supportive no matter what, for which I'm eternally grateful for.
Because you don't want to be accused also of having been kind of forced into
coerced into it.
I don't think you can
be coerced into this profession. I think you either have to do it or you don't, and if you don't have to do it, you probably shouldn't.
That may be true of all the arts.
Yeah.
But how did you come up with this? Well, I'm assuming somebody thought, maybe we should revive Machinal after all 85 years. Who should we cast in it?
Yes, it's a funny one. I heard about the play first 6 years ago, actually. Somebody handed it to me and said, you must read it. And there was a famous production in 1995 in England at the National Theatre with Fiona Shaw that a lot of people spoke about. It was Stephen Daldry did it. So I sort of peripherally knew about it. And then I read the play and thought, you know, I can understand it's why it hasn't been done for 86 years. It's not because it's bad. It's just because it's still so confronting and still so radical in many ways and arresting and unusual. And it was way, way, way ahead of its time. I mean, it shocked me when I read it. So I didn't really have any option but to do it.
And it was ahead of its time in another way, because when it opened in 1928, it featured Clark Gable in his Broadway debut.
Yes, somebody had some good sense there. to cast.
Did you read the reviews of the original production?
I saw something about... Yes, I glanced at one thing, but I didn't... No, not a lot of them, but I did glance at one thing that was fairly dismissive of her writing, actually, I thought, in a quite sort of patronising way, which she's done quite well for a woman kind of thing.
Yeah, I guess you can't get away with that anymore.
No.
Have you worked with the director Lindsay Turner before?
No, I've never directed with. I've never worked with her before. She. I saw a couple of the productions that she did in London that were very successful. Called one was called Posh and one was called Chimerica, both of which I thought were so refreshing and vibrant and had a sort of vitality that I hadn't seen for a long time, so I was excited to meet her. And she asked me to do this play, and we sat down and had a cup of tea, and I was just astounded. She's possibly one of the most eloquent, brilliant young women that I've ever met.
Well, at the beginning, the dialogue is quite unusual and almost mechanical. Is that a directorial decision, or... is that written in the play?
It's absolutely how it's written in the play. There's no, you can't escape that. I think you have to make fairly strong, inventive, imaginative choices to support it, but which I think Lindsay has done with our production, bravely so. But the play is, you know, there's a lot written about it, using the word expressionism.
Which was the style at the time.
Sure. But it's... I don't think you can actually pigeonhole it as expressionism because there's so much humanity in the writing.
But there is a lot of stylization.
Absolutely, absolutely. In the way that, you know, many people did at the time. But there's parts of it that remind me of Samuel Beckett. There's parts of it that remind me of Brecht. There's parts of it that remind me of, you know, more sort of kitchen sink human dramas as well. So that it's really extraordinary and... terms of she's just sort of using whatever devices, whatever poetry is available to her to express what she wants to express.
Because she breaks it up into 9 different scenes and they can all be done in slightly different styles.
Absolutely.
To business, home, honeymoon, maternal, prohibited, intimate, domestic, the law, and a machine.
Yes.
And the machine is really important. We get the feeling that that she's caught up in the mechanisms of society, but also... in this production, there's an incredible set.
Yes. There is an extraordinary set in this production. I like to think of it as a sort of large Rubik's Cube of New York City. Well, that's not quite what it is, but the only way to describe it is it's essentially a large box that rotates and all the walls move like a very complicated maze, and we have 6 genius technicians backstage constantly moving the walls and remembering somehow, like a great mathematical mind, the various configurations so that when the box turns it will magically be another set.
It's the sort of thing that would be a lot easier if you're making a movie, but in a play, having so many different settings, is it tricky walking through the various parts of the set as it revolves?
Well, it is, because it's constantly changing, so it never looks the same, and I never get off the box. I get on the box at the top of the show, and I never leave it for an hour and a half, so I'm moving with it. But it is the sort of thing that you could never see on film, what we're doing with this, which is, I think, what's so thrilling about it. Because there is certain stuff, there is a lot of... We use actual magician's tricks to pull off some of the illusions and the things that look make the production quite so special.
A magician's trick? I didn't see any rabbits coming out of hats.
No, there's nothing like that, but sort of, you know, distraction and all that sort of thing, and... You know, I have costumes that involve magnets, believe it or not.
Well, it also, as it revolves, we see tableaus of street scenes.
Mm, mm.
And I read that the set broke down on opening night. So what happened?
It did. And it's never happened. It never happened before, and it's never happened since.
Well, what did you
really
do?
One of those
is this where improv comes in?
Well, we had to stop. There was no way we could carry on. And then unbelievably, there were 8 members of the audience came backstage, all of which had something to do with the production in that they were partners of the stage crew, or they worked on building the machinery that made the set. They volunteered to push it manually. So it became this rather interesting one could say almost like a performance art piece where there were people in modern day dress actually pushing the box around.
Do you think that Treadwell was making the point that every part of this woman's life, from work to marriage and finally to the trial and then to the electric chair, which is also a machine, is ruled by machines? Except for the fleeting moments of happiness that she has with her lover.
I think it's one of those things. If we're to say, "Oh, it's the fault of the machines," then you let us all off the hook. I don't think she's writing about that. I think it's interesting that when the play was first done in London, they changed take some hubris to do that, but they changed the title to "The Life Machine." Now, as pompous and sort of particularly English as that is to do that, there is also something interesting in that I do think that the machine that she's talking about is the machine of life, is that there is the mechanisms that society imposes on an individual, and the, you know, and there are times during the play where she's definitely a part of that, you know, where she plays the part in the machine, and there are other times where she can't and she doesn't even know she's in it, and then she breaks out of it.
Is this a limited run?
To March 2nd it is.
And that's hard and fast?
Yeah, at the moment it's hard and fast, yeah. So quick, hurry down. I highly recommend it.
Well, obviously you would, but is this the kind of part that you look at and say, oh, that's for me? Or because it's incredibly challenging.
It's incredibly challenging.
Maybe challenge is what excites some people in the arts.
Absolutely. I don't, you know.
What's next for you?
What's next for me is doing this till March the 2nd, where I'll be very sad it's over because I love doing it more than I've loved many things I've ever done. And then I don't know. I'm probably gonna have to go and do a lot of promotion for a film I've got coming out in April called Transcendence.
But you can see Machinal at the American Airlines Theater. It's a Roundabout Theater Company production. And my great thanks to Rebecca Hall for being on our show.
Thank you.
Do you find doing American accents easy now that you've done so many?
I do, but I have to sort of not claim credit. My mum's American.
So you grew up being able to be kind of bilingual.
Yeah, I'm half and half.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.